entire cast of Back to Reality, we bid you farewell. Thank you for listening.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Savior.
Oh, the Savior of mankind, please show us the sign.
To the designer of the human civilization that is established on the unity of Almighty Allah.
You are a true God.
To the redeemer of human volition and thought.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. This is The Last Savior. I am your humble host, Zainab. Dear listeners, as you know, we have been discussing about Mahdawiyat, Imam Mahdi, in this session. And today in our studio, we have with us Dr. Karimi. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Karimi.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
It's a pleasure to be with you, sir. Thank you for accepting the invitation.
Thank you for having me.
Let me give you just, we had been talking about the hadith of Saqalain, which says, in which Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, said, I am leaving among you two precious things which will not get separated from each other until they join me back at the pond of Kausar in heavens. So Dr. Karimi, we said that this hadith is quoted even in Sunni narrations, you know, Sunni authentic books, and many Sunni authentic rajals have mentioned this hadith. How does this hadith prove the existence of Imam Mahdi?
Again, the interesting point is that both Shia and Sunni scholars, they have argued with this hadith to prove the existence of a person from the Ahlul Bayt or the Itra. As you rightly mentioned, the Holy Prophet says, I'm living among you, the Muslims, the Quran, and my Itra, my progeny, and they are together till the Day of Judgment. Now, first of all, let me refer to some of the arguments mentioned by some Shia scholars. For example, one of the contemporary Shia scholars, Ayatollah Wahid Khorasani, may Allah protect him, he says that one of the reasons which proved the existence of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam is hadith of Thaqalain. Why? Because according to this narration, the Holy Prophet says that the Noble Book of Quran and the progeny of the Ahlul Bayt, they are together till the Day of Judgment. So in each time and era, there must be a member of the progeny of the Prophet so that there is no separation between the Quran and that person from the Ahlul Bayt. And this is how it proves the existence of a person from the Ahlul Bayt.
Yeah, so you mean say like if Quran is in the society, so shall be the progeny.
Exactly.
So shall be someone from the progeny, Prophet Muhammad. Yeah.
Now, let me just refer to one point here. One may say that, okay, maybe the Holy Prophet meant, for example, the Quran and the narrations of the Ahlul Bayt,
yeah,
not a member,
yeah,
a living member of the Ahlul Bayt. So, for example, the Holy Prophet meant the Noble Book of Quran and the narrations of Imam Ali alayhi salam. So it doesn't prove the existence of other Imams.
Yeah.
Now, the answer to that is that if it was the case, then even we didn't need the progeny at all, because in that case, the narrations of the Prophet were enough for us.
Yeah.
So when the Holy Prophet is referring to the fact that in each time and era, people need two things, the Quran and the progeny, it means that it is important for that member of the Ahlul Bayt to be living among the people. So the narrations of the previous Imam or the Prophet is not enough, because in each time and era, people are in need of the answers to the newly raised questions. Okay. So we cannot claim that it is referring to the narrations. In that case, the narrations of the Prophet were enough.
Yeah.
I can feel your eyes like the sun shining behind the clouds. I meet up morning to shatter this long night forever. I need a hero to stop this thousand-year-old
The other argument in this regard is mentioned by one of the great Shia scholars who recently passed away, Ayatollah Safi Golpaygani. May Allah's mercy be upon him. He says that we can take 6 points from Hadith of Thaqalain. First of all, the fact that it is an obligation upon all Muslims to refer to the Quran and the progeny.
Mm-hmm.
Second, the only way of salvation and being away from misguidance is to resort to the Quran and the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, because the Holy Prophet says, as long as you hold fast to them, that is the Quran and the progeny, you will never go astray. The third point is that the condition for salvation is to referring to both of them, Quran and the progeny, not only one of them.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth point, which is also very important, is the infallibility of the Ahlul Bayt. I need to clarify this point because it's important too. How does the Hadith of Thaqalain prove the infallibility of the Ahlul Bayt? Because this is one of the beliefs of the Shia, and the other Muslims do not believe in that. Although many of them, they highly regard the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam, but they do not believe in the infallibility or isma of the Ahlul Bayt. Now, we can argue that, first of all, when the Holy Prophet says that if you refer to the Ahlul Bayt, then you will not go astray. This is proving the infallibility of the Ahlul Bayt, because if they are fallible like us, it means that they may lead us astray. They may commit sins or make mistakes when it comes to the religion. So when the Holy Prophet is giving us a guarantee, like, as long as you refer to the Quran and the Ahlul Bayt, you are immune from any kind of misguidance.
Yeah.
It means that then it requires that the Ahlul Bayt must be free from any kind of mistake and even committing sins. And the second point which proves this fact is that the Ahlul Bayt are somehow, made similar to the Noble Book of Quran. And you know that the Quran is free from any kind of mistake. So the same should be true about the Ahlul Bayt.
Yeah, so, the one who explains
it. Exactly. So when through referring to the Quran, we are immune from any way to misguidance, the same is true about the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi wasalam.
Yeah.
The next point that Ayatollah Safi believes that we can benefit and take from Hadith of Thaqalain is that the progeny of the Ahlul Bayt are the most knowledgeable people after the Prophet. Otherwise, the Holy Prophet should have introduced other people. And the last point is that in each time and era, there must be a living hujjah or proof from the Ahlul Bayt among the people. Why? He says that there are a couple of phrases in Hadith of Thaqalain which proves the fact that in each time and era, we need a member of the Ahlul Bayt. Like, in our time, we need to have a living
member
imam. For sure, we believe that that is Imam Mahdi, son of Imam Askari, alayhi salam. And we know that the Hadith of Thaqalain has been mentioned with different versions, different phrases like "Anni tarikum fikum al-thaqalain," or "Anni mukhallifum fikum," or "I'm leaving among you two precious things." "Anni tarikum fikum khalifatain," "I'm leaving among you two caliphs," or "Anni qad taraktu fikum," or "Anni qad khallaftu fikum al-thaqalain." All these phrases means that after the Holy Prophet, the successor of the Prophet in all the issues are the Quran and the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam. Now, if there is no living member of the Ahlul Bayt, it means that in some times we have some gap, and in that gap, there is no successor of the Prophet. So when the Holy Prophet is telling us that I'm living two precious things, it means that in each time and era, we have the Quran and we have a member of the Ahlul Bayt. Then the Holy Prophet is talking about Khalifa, successor. It means for all the issues. And it requires for us to have a living member of the Ahlul Bayt in each time and era. The second point is that the Holy Prophet said, لَن تَضَلُّ مَا إِن تَمَسَكْتُمْ بِهِمَا لَن تَضَلُّ أَبَدًا. As long as you hold fast to the Quran and the Ahlul Bayt, you will never go astray. Lan in Arabic language refers to the fact that it will never happen. So if we do not have a living member of the Ahlul Bayt, we cannot claim that for sure there is no misguidance.
We need someone to have, like, tell us answers, what will happen if this thing happens.
Exactly.
And as things change, time change, people change, so new things come up.
And the third phrase which proves the existence of a living member is لَنْ يَفْتَرَقَ. These two will never get separated till the Day of Judgment. So again, imagine if there is no living member of the Ahlul Bayt, like in our time, it means that there is a separation. Quran is there, but there is no member of the Ahlul Bayt to be together with the Quran. The Holy Prophet continues to say that حَتَّى يَرِدَ عَلَيَّ الْحَوْلِ, till the Day of Judgment. Again, it refers to the fact that till the Day of Judgment, always we have the Quran free from any kind of distortion. And this is also one of the narrations referring to the fact that Quran is free from any kind of tahrif or alteration and distortion. And also referring to the fact that in each time, Quran and the progeny of the Ahlul Bayt are together. So this is the argument as mentioned by Ayatollah Safi, rahmatullah alayhi.
I'll be talking to you, Dr. Karimi. Here we need to take a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio. Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio, and this is The Lost Savior. We have been discussing about the Hadith of Thaqalain and how does Hadith of Thaqalain prove the existence of Imam Mahdi. Dr. Karimi, you came up with a number of narrations. You came up with some of the points that were pointed out by great scholars. So do we have Sunni scholars saying something about that?
Sure. It is very interesting to find that the same argument among Sunni scholars, because we know that when it comes to Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, the main difference is that they believe in Imam Mahdi, but they believe that he will be born in future. Interestingly, we find among some Sunni scholars the fact that they have also mentioned that Hadith of Thaqalain refers to the fact that in each time and era, we need a member of the Ahlul Bayt living among the people, so that people, by referring to the Quran and the progeny, and I mean that member, they will be immune from any kind of misguidance. For example, Manawi, one of the great Sunni scholars in the 11th century after Hijra, in his famous book Faidul Qadir, volume 3, page 15, he says the following. He mentions Hadith of Thaqalain, and then he says that we conclude from Hadith of Thaqalain that in each time there must be a member of the Ahlul Bayt, and he should be there fi kulli zaman, in each time and era, ila qiyam as-sa'ah, till the day of judgment. Otherwise, we are not able to act upon this narration.
Yeah.
When the Holy Prophet is telling us that you need to refer to the Quran and the Ahlul Bayt, it means that in each time there should be a member of the Ahlul Bayt. Otherwise, he continues to say that they are amanun li ahli al-ard. They are a kind of safety for the people of the earth. فَإِذَا ذَهَبُوا ذَهَبَ أَهْلُ الْأَرْضِ. This is mentioned in many narrations that if there is no member of the Ahlul Bayt, if there is no hujja, divine proof on the earth, then the whole earth would be destroyed. The other Sunni scholar in this regard is Ibn al-Hajar Haythami, who is also a very famous Sunni scholar. He says the following. The conclusion regarding Hadith of Thaqalain is that we need to refer to the Book of Quran and the Sunnah of the Prophet, and those people who are knowledgeable regarding the Quran and Sunnah, who are they? He says, Ahlul Bayt. We conclude from these narrations that these three, that is the Quran, the tradition of the Prophet, and the Ahlul Bayt, they are there till the day of judgment. This is in the famous book, As-Sawa'iq al-Muhriqa, volume 2, page 439.
Yeah.
Again, he says that the narrations which tell us to refer to the Ahl Bayt, they refer to the fact that in each time and era on the earth, there is someone from the Ahlul Bayt, like the Quran. As we have the Quran in each time and era within our access, so we need to have a member of the Ahlul Bayt among us as well. Also, he refers to another narration which says that في كل خلف من عمتي عدول من أهل بيتي. In all the generations after me, that is the Prophet, there is a just person from my progeny. This is in As-Sawa'iq al-Muhriqa, volume 2, page 442. Interesting point is that although they may not believe in Imam Mahdi alayhi salam as the son of Imam Askari alayhi salam to be the promised Mahdi, but they, at least some of them, they believe that in each time and era we need a member of the Ahlul Bayt living among the people.
Wow, that's so interesting. You came up with narrations from Sunni school of thought and as well as Shia school of thought that both say Prophet mentioned in the Hadith of Thaqalain what are the Ahlul Bayt, and you said many famous known Sunni scholars say that we need the progeny of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his family, in all the times.
Thanks.
Thank you so much, Dr. Karimi, being with us. Thank you so much, listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio.
Where is the rising sun? Where is the spring of life? Where is the shining moon? Where is the firmest rose?
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Uh,
A zoo in Ireland's capital, Dublin, has unveiled its newest habitat called the Himalayan Hills, a brand new home of the red panda and the snow leopard. Visitors are able to see the red panda's habitat by traveling along the new trail around a rocky edge to an open viewing area. The red pandas are typically climbing, exploring, or munching on bamboo at the top of broad-leafed evergreen trees. The expanded habitat was designed with a red panda's tree-dwelling lifestyle in mind. Also, visitors can gaze up at the 15-meter rocky slope through an impressive panoramic viewing area to spot the snow leopards. These elusive felines are typically nocturnal, so catching a glimpse of one is a rare treat. The project took a few years to complete. It was halted in 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic and massive budget shortages, but was restarted after government funding in 2021. The zoo is part of a protection project for red pandas and snow leopards. These animals are listed as vulnerable due to threats from poaching and severe habitat loss. With neon lights on the floor and walls, pulsing electronic beats, and a glowing red shuttlecock bouncing back and forth, Malaysian badminton court evokes a sci-fi movie set. Shuttle in the Dark is a badminton hall in the iconic Petronas Twin Towers in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. It was set up in late 2021 by a sport management company to encourage people to take up the racket sport after 2 years of social restrictions because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Director of INIC Sport Management says the initial goal was to draw sports fans and players back into action.
Our initial goal was how can we encourage and gain back the interest of people to come back and play. And not only those enthusiasts, but then as well the new people who was not able to or never play badminton before. So that's why we come out with this experience called Shuttle in the Dark.
Playing on a futuristic court presents an unusual challenge for athletes as they have to adjust their eyes to the darkness to fly. Badminton is one of the most popular sports in Malaysia and Asia, with a thriving community in the Southeast Asian community. It has produced some of the world's top-ranked players. Ancient Pompeii has a new guardian, Spot, a four-legged robot dog that will inspect the ancient Italian city's streets and tunnels to identify structural issues. The robot, designed by the U.S. firm Boston Dynamics, will patrol Pompeii at nighttime. The robot inspects the smallest of spaces and gathers data for planning interventions to fix safety and structural issues. Equipped with a 360-degree camera, Spot will also protect the city's streets from illegal relic hunters who cause structural damage to the ruins by digging tunnels. Pompeii will also have its own eye in the sky, a Leica BLK-2 flying laser scanner capable of autonomously conducting 3D scans of the ruins, helping Spot carry out its tasks. Safeguarding ancient sites from treasure hunters has always been a problem for every country, especially the ancient ones.
A super rare birth has added a cute member to critically endangered Sumatran rhinos of Indonesia. The newborn calf is the sixth born since intensive efforts to breed the species began in the 1980s. The female calf, which doesn't have a name yet, was given birth to by a rhino named Rosa in a sanctuary. Rosa has suffered 8 miscarriages since 2005 when she was brought in from the wild for a breeding program. Fewer than 80 Sumatran rhinos remain in the world, mainly on the Indonesian islands of Sumatra and Borneo. Excessive poaching along with other threats has brought the species to the brink of extinction. The cherry blossom or sakura season in the Japanese capital is a magical experience as trees burst into bloom, dousing the streets with stunning shades of pink. This year, people are enjoying the occasion to the fullest as COVID restrictions are no more there. Thousands gathered in central Tokyo wearing masks, taking pictures and posing for selfies among the trees. Cherry flowers reach full bloom on Sunday, 4 days earlier than usual, according to the Japan Meteorological Agency. The age-old tradition of viewing cherry blossoms typically takes place across the country. The flowers are a national obsession. People flock to parks to hold parties and picnics. However, due to the pandemic, authorities have asked people to refrain from eating and drinking outdoors.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Millions of people across the world celebrate Earth Hour, a symbolic Lights Out event that aims to call attention to environmental issues and the necessity of protecting the planet. The annual event encourages people to turn off their non-essential lighting for an hour and take a break from using electronic devices during that period. Earth Hour takes place every year on the last Saturday of March. The theme of this year's event is Shape Our Future and has been celebrated in more than 180 countries, including Greece, France, Thailand, and Iran. The initiative was first introduced in 2007 by the World Wildlife Fund as a grassroots movement for highlighting the collective responsibility of the people towards their environment. An ancient place in Guatemala with special significance for the Mayan culture could be the next entry on the World Heritage List. The historic village known today as the Takalik Abaj Archaeological Park was occupied for 1700 years before it was abandoned and discovered in 1888. It's said to have been home to a pre-Hispanic people. Archaeologists found their way to this mysterious piece of land where they found a series of exotic artifacts and sculptures back in 2008. Guatemala's Minister of Cultural Heritage says this site has a sacred place in the nation's culture.
Takalik Abaj is a sacred place with important links to Guatemala's culture. It's a place that harbors flora and fauna biodiversity and even Mayan spirituality and war is wild. This makes this place highly important within the Mayan culture in Guatemala.
Archaeologists believe the monuments go back to the deep-rooted civilizations of Olmec and Maya in a Central American culture around 400 BC. The government has presented the site to UNESCO, hoping it will be declared a World Heritage Site. A Belgian-British teenager is on a solo flight around the globe that could make him a world record holder. Mark Rutherford started his journey from a small airfield near the Bulgarian capital Sofia on Wednesday. His first destination is the island of Sicily in Italy. From there, he'll fly south to Africa and then around the globe to cross the finish line again in Bulgaria. The 16-year-old pilot says he got his inspiration from his sister.
Egypt's rich history seems to be a gift that keeps on giving. The country has unveiled some exquisite newly discovered tombs. The pharaonic tombs were found at the Saqqara archaeological site south of Cairo. The site is a big necropolis of Memphis, an ancient capital of Egypt. The graves belonged to a senior royal official, or rather senior royal officials. Some of the graves are engraved with interesting titles such as Steward of the Royal House and Supervisor of the Garden. The tombs are around 4,000 years old, dating back to the Old Kingdom of Egypt.
Iranian families celebrated the ancient tradition of Sizde Bedar, or Nature's Day, by spending some quality time outdoors with family. Yusuf Jalali has a story.
It's Nature's Day in Iran, and parks and countrysides are flooded with families who never miss the chance to spend the final day of Nowruz holidays out with their loved ones. The ancient occasion is called Sizde Bedar. Over the past 2 years, the festival was called off amid the coronavirus pandemic, and it's the first time in 2 years that Sizde Bedar is marked with such a huge crowd.
Because of the coronavirus, people could not go out on Sizde Bedar for 2 years in a row. And this year, the majority are vaccinated and green spaces are jam-packed with picnic goers.
We Iranians have grown up with Sizde Bedar and we never miss it. Thank God we can safely enjoy this amazing tradition this year with all our family members and relatives.
Sizde Bedar means getting rid of number 13. In Persian mythology, 13 is the bad luck number. Now Sizde Bedar is believed to chase away the bad luck and bring good vibes.
Today, we cooked special foods like arsh and chicken kebab to eat them for lunch with our family members. We traditionally believe that this day brings bad luck and we must spend it outdoors with joy to get rid of it.
The event is also called the Festival of Nature, and it is an occasion to raise awareness of the need to preserve the environment.
Throughout the history, Iranians have had close relationship with nature, and that's why we have dedicated a special day in our calendar to nature. Before we leave our place here, we clean the environment.
Sizde Bedar is the final day of the two-week celebrations of the Persian New Year, known as Nowruz, which marks the beginning of spring in the Northern Hemisphere. The tradition has been celebrated for some 3,000 years in Iran, Tajikistan, and Afghanistan, among other communities. Everyone must have missed outdoor gatherings after more than 2 years of COVID restrictions. Now that worries over the pandemic have eased to some extent, Sizde Bedar once again reunited Iranians with Mother Nature, with all the good vibes and hope for a world free of the coronavirus. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrow Shahi.
Shahid Muhammad Baqir Al-Sadr.
He was born in Qadhimiyya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudi was.
When we look at the works of late Rawzati, we see.
There is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamari that he says in Farsi, Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners. You are listening to the program The Teacher, an analysis on the thoughts, biographies, and the works of the most outstanding Muslim dignitaries all across the nation of Islam, the world of Islam. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahdavi and Sheikh Zianyab. Sheikh Zianyab, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
And Sheikh Mahdavi, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Okay, for today's discussion, we want to talk about an outstanding figure who is known as the leader of the Shiites of Nigeria. He was directly affected by the Islamic Revolution of Iran and the late Imam Khomeini, and he converted into the Shia Islam. And in today's world, he is the source of benefit for so many of the Muslim Shia preachers in Africa, especially in Nigeria. He's no one but Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki. Okay, let's start with you, Sheikh Mahdavi. Give us some information about the early life of Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki was born on 5 May 1953. According to lunar calendar, it was 15th of Sha'ban, 1372. He was born in Zaria, Kaduna State, and then he attended the provincial Arabic school in Zaria. The school for Arabic studies, and as it is narrated, he had some meeting with Imam Khomeini before the revolution of Iran. And by the revolution, he converted to Shia Islam. And after his conversion and embracing Shia Islam, he initiated a lot of school and the Islamic movement of Nigeria, which is especially for the Shia Islam or Shia followers in Nigeria. So he initiated more than 300 schools in which he was enabled to nurture and cultivate students, a new generation of Shia people over there. Because we have the followers of Ahlul Bayt all around the African continent. But to know about Shia Islam perfectly well, all imams, all rulings, this is something that compared to other religions or to compare to the followers of other sects like Sunnis and other things, it's really few. But in Nigeria, we have the real version of Shia Islam, meaning that they believe in 12 imams. They are believing in the concept of marja'i taqlid. They have to follow a marja'i taqlid. And all these acquaintances took place through the leadership of Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki, which we can say, according to the history, it has started from 1979 and it's still continuing, even though there were a lot of attack and there were a lot of suffering, specifically during the last decade.
Okay, we got to, we can say those events which took place in Nigeria, killing so many people, including the sons of Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki. Sure. And is it true that more than 12 million people converted to Shia Islam because of him, Sheikh Zainiyah?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Before this, I should mention that because I had some discussion with a person that had a meeting with Sheikh Zakzaki, and he had a travel, tablighi travel to Zaria in 2013. He was saying that the quotation is from him, that Sheikh Zakzaki went to meet with Imam Khomeini Rahmatullah Alayh.
Okay.
And there were some discussion between these two. And then Imam Khomeini Rahmatullah Alayh gave a copy of Holy Quran to Sheikh Zakzaki and told him and addressed him, go and preach Islam in your country with this Quran. And with the bless and barakah of the Holy Quran, after 20, 30 years, we witnessed the population at least 12 million. Of course, some people, they estimate the number of 20 million Shia followers over there. That is, without any doubt, the biggest number of Shia population in Africa continent.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
So with the blessings of the Holy Quran, this movement started, and the Sheikh Zakzaki as the head of Islamic movement in Nigeria is known today. As my brother mentioned, the troops invaded the celebration and gatherings that they were having in the month of Ramadan. They had some demonstration in Quds Day, that is the last Friday of the month of Ramadan in 2014 in Zaria. At this, you know, demonstration was taking place more than 6-7 years in that place. But at that year, the troops attacked the demonstration and killed about 35 people, amongst which are three sons of the Sheikh Zakzaki. And, you know, our audiences, they may find the video clip in the internet that the Sheikh is reciting Talqin for his own three sons, naming them, and these bodies are laid, you know, in the graves.
Wow.
And he is sitting above the grave and reciting Talqin for his own sons. This is really moving.
Yeah, moving and difficult and, for father, that's right.
Yeah. So these 35 were killed.
Okay.
And the Sheikh himself, after some months, was imprisoned illegally for 6 years. And he was detained. He and his wife were detained. And, you know, he was injured. His eyes were going to be blind, but they were not letting him out of prison to have treatment. And when, after 6 years, they allowed him, they sent him to India. That's of course, it was sponsored by some, you know, merchants, Shia merchants, the expenses of the travel. But the security officers, they didn't let him to the hospital that they were supposed to go. They directed them to another hospital. And Sheikh Zakzaki rejected. After 3 days, again, they returned back to Nigeria and to the prison. And recently, after more 6 years imprisonment, illegal imprisonment, a court in Nigeria declared that Sheikh Zakzaki must not be in prison and detainment.
He was freed and exonerated from all the wrong accusations, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, he was acquitted by the end.
By the end, that's right. Okay.
But they are not allowing him even now to quit from Nigeria for having treatment, medical treatment for his disease that he is facing with.
That's right, really a source of benefit. He lost 3 sons or 6 sons?
Actually, 6 sons of Sheikh Zakzaki were killed by Nigerian army. In the history of Nigeria, specifically during the last decade, 2 very grieving incidents took place, which even our listener can Google it and look it up under the name of 2014 Quds Massacre, 2015 massacre. Both took place in Nigeria.
One of them was in Muharram and the other one in Quds Day, isn't it?
Yes, the second one. So, as my brother mentioned, in Quds Day massacre, the official numbers that they announced, it was something around 35. But for 2015 massacre, above 375 people.
Wow.
And this is besides the bodies that were buried anonymously, without telling their names. Oh. They are saying that equal to this number. So above 700 people were killed. To the extent that we see that all these human rights organizations that barely they may stay inside or they may stay with the side of Shia or people, oppressed people of the world, they denounced the army of Nigeria and they said that these actions, you have to stop attacking Shia minority in your country. So Sheikh Zakzaki, he lost 6 of his son, and overall he's got 9 children. Okay. And for now, he's only left with 1 son and 2 daughters.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. And it was a really sadful incident to the extent that many officials, including Maraje and the politicians, took a very harsh stance by denouncing what Nigerian army and Nigerian government did upon Shia community over there. Even in Iran, President Rouhani, they called for the ambassador of Nigeria in order to denounce the rights of actually attack against the Shia minority in Nigeria.
That's all right. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, called Ibrahim Zakzaki as the most oppressed ones in the world who try to, as a believer or a faithful person who tries to achieve proximity between the religions in a peaceful manner. And this was what Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said about him in the Islamic Unity Conference in Tehran, referring to the incidents which took place in Nigeria and Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki. Really, sacrificing your family and your, especially family members, for your main cause, which is preaching Islam and Shia Islam in Nigeria, which are backed, I think, by the Saudis' money, isn't it?
Yeah, as Sheikh
himself says that.
He himself is saying that this is the result of Saudi support to the army of Nigeria.
Nigeria, that's all right. Okay.
Because of the enmity that this government has upon the Shia.
Especially Wahhabism,
Yeah, definitely.
Because more than 12 million people converted into Shia Islam, a good community over there, and the Ja'fariya school of thought and the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, and for sure the Wahhabis, with their money, with the petrol money, they try their best in order to stop it. They are not successful, of course.
Of course, we should mention that this is not the case that we think that, Sheikh Zakzaki's efforts are all going toward, changing people from Sunni into Shia.
No.
Because his own brother now is a Sunni person.
Yes.
And whenever Sheikh went to visit him, Sheikh Zakzaki was performing his salat behind his brother.
Yes.
That he was Sunni. He is Sunni even now.
But being Sunni is different from being a Wahhabi, you know, and being extremist. And and this is the way, yet peaceful talks and peaceful dialogues and the conversation. And many of the Sunni brethren have respect for the members of the Ahlul Bayt, for Imam al-Hussein, and these ceremonies all around the world.
For sure. You know, and that's the point that Wahhabis, they don't want people be aware of.
Yes.
That Sunni and Shia, they are not having problem with each other.
Yes.
They are all Muslims. But Wahhabis, they try to, you know, broadcast their Salafi and Takfiri beliefs.
Yes.
And they are saying that whoever is not following us is infidel.
Okay.
And we should know that Sheikh established about 300 Islamic schools all over Nigeria and some countries other than Nigeria.
That's right.
And he established the institution of Ash-Shuhada to follow up the affairs regarding the children of martyrs and the orphans.
Yes.
And he also established the Az-Zahra Charity Institution to serve social services and to give, you know, services to people who are poor and they are in need of medical services or different services that they are in need of.
Okay.
So he was not trying to change beliefs,
yes,
but he was trying to change the, you know, poor situation of the people that they were living at Nigeria. And may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala bless him and give barakah to his activities even more.
Inshallah. Yes, the humanitarian, you know, actions and the deeds that he did in the Nigeria are really beautiful. So many humanitarian organizations were not successful in achieving such, you know, good results that he did through all these years. By the name of religion, the peaceful dialogues and establishing dialogues between denominations over there, so many people converting and really reviving some of the rituals through the month of Muharram and the holy month of Ramadan in Nigeria on different occasions. And this is really, I think, beautiful. And he made the greatest sacrifice that a person can make, you know. Six of the sons were martyred on this path. He is backed by the Maraja and by the Shiite leaders now all around the world.
I just wanted to mention one point. We have to see in response to this movement which took place and the embracing Shiism among Nigerian local people, in response to this, we see Boko Haram was created by Saudi Arabia.
Oh.
And now, what is the fruit of creation or what is the fruit of creating Boko Haram there? And what was the fruit of having such a large movement
Islamic
of Shiism?
Islamic movement of Nigeria.
So now they are Boko Haram, as you know, in their local language means education is banned or forbidden.
Yes.
So they're against humanism, they're against modernism, everything. And this is all backed by Wahhabism. So wherever they go, we see all filthy fruit of their actually family. When they go to Syria, we see Daesh.
Yes.
And when it goes to Africa, we see the African branch of Daesh, which is called Boko Haram, and they are taking or recruiting people from here and there. And all people, even non-Muslims, witness that the fruit of Daesh everywhere is actually violence.
That's
nothing than violence.
And people like Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki are really after peace and making peace over there, but with the language of religion and the teachings of the Shia Islam, which is really beautiful and which is really working over there. May Allah prolong his life and may Allah protect him. Thank you very much, Sheikh Mahtavi and Sheikh Ziyaniya, for your presence in the program, The Teacher. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program, The Teacher. For more information, visit our website at parstory.com/Yankalavislam page. You can download for free all our previous episodes of the program, The Teacher. To another episode, God bless you. Afi Amanallah.
Ooh. Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The fasting of the month of Ramadan is an important pillar of our faith.
إنما سمي رمضان لأنه يرمض الذنوب.
Verily, the month of Ramadan has been thus named because it scorches away sins.
What does Maha Ramadan mean to us?
This is Dialogue, a program on the holy month of Ramadan and the importance of fasting.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to the program. This is Dialogue. We're talking about the blessed and holy month of Ramadan. The holy month of Ramadan, as you all know, is the blessed and honorable month when the doors of the Almighty Allah's mercy are open. It is the blessed month when forgiveness is easy to gain, but only if we take our steps in this direction. The holy month of Ramadan, the great month when the doors of hell are closed, a beautiful, a blessed, an honorable month, a month where we return towards the Almighty Allah. The holy month of Ramadan, a month where we gain our provisions for our journey towards the hereafter. The holy month of Ramadan, where we establish a connection with our loving, nurturing Lord, our Creator and Sustainer, Allah, exalted and glorified is He. The holy month of Ramadan, the greatest of months, the most honorable of months. This month in which we can return towards Allah. This month in which we can reconnect with Allah. This month in which we can gain the provisions for the hereafter, this, the holy month of Ramadan.
قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وآله إن أبواب السماء تفتح في أول ليلة من شهر رمضان ولا تغلق إلى آخر ليلة منه.
Prophet Muhammad صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم stated, Verily the gates of the heavens are opened on the first night of the month of Ramadan and are not closed again until the very last night.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's an honor to have you with us. You're listening to IRIB English Radio, the program's dialogue, and we were talking about the holy month of Ramadan. Dear friends, this holy month of Ramadan is one of the greatest and most beautiful and blessed months of the entire year. It is a month which is full of blessings. It is a month which is full of opportunities. It is also the month in which the Holy Quran, the very word of Allah, was sent down to mankind. And this is the only month that has been named in the Holy Quran itself. The night of Qadr, Laylatul Qadr, which is commonly translated as the night of power or the night of destiny, is also in this very month, the holy month of Ramadan. And furthermore, we find that the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household, has said in a tradition that all of the divine books which were sent down by the Almighty Allah were sent down during the holy month of Ramadan, the best of Allah's months. Dear friends, this is a month in which the Holy Quran was revealed. And matter of fact, if we read the verses of the Holy Quran, they are multiplied many times fold. So if you were to read the whole Quran in this holy month of Ramadan, especially since this is the month in which this very immaculate and perfect and untouched and unchangeable word of Allah was revealed, isn't it appropriate and rather elegant for us to recite the Holy Quran in this beautiful month? And as the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household, has said, all of the divine books were sent down during this very month of Ramadan. And it is this month of Ramadan that is the best of Allah's months. But one quick point here, dear friends, dear fellow fasters in this holy month of Ramadan. This one point is that merely reciting the Holy Quran is not enough. In this holy month of Ramadan, we should try our very best in this holy month in which the Quran was revealed. We must try our very best to reflect upon the Holy Quran, to think and contemplate upon the words and the sentences and the phrases and the statements of the Holy Quran. What is it that the Almighty Allah, the Creator and Sustainer of everything in existence, is saying to each and every one of us? We must realize that the Holy Quran is a book for humanity on a global level,
but it is also at the same time a book for every single individual. So make sure to read, contemplate, reflect,